Okay, are we good to go here? Of course we are. Man, every once in a while you see a movie that leaves you baffled on every imaginable level.
Yes.
In every imaginable way. He's Clarkson. I'm Jim. Please welcome to the Film Thugs.
Barbaric.
Oh, we are so glad to have y'all here. You know, it's wonderful. Boy, this is a movie that I have not seen since probably living in Panama.
Malice.
Yes. Agreed. Oh, yeah. I haven't seen this since it was new on home video. I know for a fact I saw it in the theater.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, that's big.
Yeah, that is a move. God damn, this thing's more than anything baffling.
Yes.
We are, of course, talking about the grand 1986 epic.
Soul Man.
Now, let's dive in just on the easy. Jesus Christ.
So, here's some deets, right?
Yes, we definitely need some deets and some context that will make this movie
Soul Man, 1986 American comedy film directed by Steve Miner and written by Carol L. Blackwell.
Yes.
Black. Starring C. Thomas Howell.
Stars
as a white male law student who pretends to be black in order to qualify for a scholarship. The title refers to the song of the same name by Isaac Hayes and David Porter. Don't you just love Wikipedia?
I do love Wikipedia. And they're putting Isaac Hayes as the original, like, not
just
Sam
before,
and Dave.
Before you come out and say anything, I have black friends. So, what else has Steve Miner directed, you may be asking yourself.
I am very curious.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Friday the 13th, Part 2, also producer. Okay. Friday the 13th, Part 3. House.
Okay.
Soul Man.
Okay.
Warlock. Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken. Not familiar. Forever Young. My Father the Hero. Big Bully. Halloween H2O 20 Years Later. Lake Placid. Texas Rangers. Day of the Dead.
He did Lake Placid?
Exactly. And it's hard to wrap your head around. This is the same guy.
He did Lake Placid?
Yes. 2008, Private Valentine, Blonde and Dangerous. Carol Black, American writer and filmmaker, known as creator, writer, and producer of the series The Wonder Years, and Ellen, both with her husband and writing partner, Neil Marins. Black and Marins received the 1988 Emmy Award for Outstanding Comedy Series for The Wonder Years. And in 1989, the Writers Guild of America Award for first six-episode season.
So here's what I'm going to say real quick and give some of my feelings on Wonder Years. A good show. I like it. But she's really good at writing a protagonist who is a cocksucker that I hate.
Correct.
Because I hate Kevin Arnold.
Correct.
Oh, God, I hated Kevin Arnold. And part of the problem was you and I are the same age Kevin Arnold was when that show came on. Mm-hmm. So everyone else is like, oh, remember what it was like to be a kid? I was like, fuck that. I never, ever acted like, oh, God, fuck this prick.
Exactly.
Oh, I hated Kevin Arnold.
Exactly. I had a very Ferris Bueller reaction to him. Or rather, the same reaction I had to him, I had to Ferris Bueller.
Yes.
Like, fuck this asshole.
And much like Ferris Bueller, the only really, really thing that is unquestionably great in that show is Olivia de Havilland.
Correct.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Miriam, her older sister, was very pretty, a Bond girl, but Olivia was...
Yeah, that's where it's at.
God so, damn.
With that knowledge...
With that knowledge, yeah.
You can understand, if you haven't seen Soul Man, I know why.
Yeah.
But the overall handling of this film is... very sitcom-ish.
Yes.
It's a super long sitcom episode. It's actually like four episodes.
It's like four sitcom episodes put together, and one of them tries to be a bottle episode.
Correct.
And it really, the parents thing. Did he have a knife? I think he had a knife.
Right. And there are legitimately funny moments.
There are great moments that play on exactly what they want to play on and land perfectly.
Yes. And there are
serious moments that work and land exactly how they want. The problem is, both of them are always immediately followed by some sitcom bullshit that fucking ruins
it. Exactly. So, the controversy over this picture is pointed to Spike Lee as being sort of the spearhead of the controversy. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
It's controversial on its face.
Exactly, yes. On its own, this is a controversial film.
But Spike Lee came out around the time that it debuted and was on the Dick Cavett Show, and he was promoting She's All That at the time.
She's Gotta Have It.
She's Gotta Have It, excuse me. She's All That is not the same.
Not
the same. At all. And Dick Cavett brought up, you know, have you seen this? How do you feel about it? And Spike Lee said, well, every black person in this movie look like an idiot because they can't clock this guy.
Yes.
And thought it was basically insulting to the black experience. No argument there.
None whatsoever.
He was criticized by Radon Chong because the one who plays a female lead in this, because he never watched the movie.
Yeah.
Said he wasn't going to. He didn't need to. Yeah. I mean, it'd probably be fairer if you had.
Yes, it would. Yeah.
But I can see why he wouldn't want to.
Yes, this is an understandable
So because angle. Of that, some people that, some of the defenders point to Spike Lee as being the source of the controversy rather than it just being a fucking bad idea.
It's such a weird, that is so weird to me. That is such a, like, old white guy who thinks racism was over kind of feel to it. It's like, well, if this one guy wasn't saying anything, there wouldn't be a problem with the whole movie. Like,
exactly.
Oh, you really want to not pay attention to anyone else, do you?
And that sort of thinking,
I
gather from my research, is sort of this movie's problem.
Yeah, I think you're right.
C. Thomas Howell around 2016 or 2021, I get the dates confused, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Lately, right? Came out and said his son wanted to watch the movie. I guess his kid was 11 or 12 at the time.
Uh-huh.
And wanted to watch Soul Man, so they did. And he said he was struck with how innocent the movie is.
Uh-huh.
Didn't understand why people get so upset by it. That is the exact same thinking that was prevalent when this was made.
It's very ham-handed.
Incredibly hammy.
It might be the hammiest hands that I've seen on a subject in a while.
Yeah, because there are real issues, and I have, of course, have the disclaimer.
Yeah.
I don't understand the black experience in America
at all. In the slightest. Yeah.
I can throw my empathy and support, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. I will never understand it.
Yeah.
And I don't try to. Like, I don't try to act like I do, rather.
Yeah, yeah.
So, with that knowledge, I looked at this the first time the same way I look at it now.
Yeah.
In other words, my idea this was a problem was the same when I was 10, 11 years old,
whenever
I saw it for the first time, that it is now at 47.
Yeah.
This is a problem.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking around, people laughing, going, this is an issue here.
Yeah.
Not in it outright being racist, necessarily.
Yeah.
More of how you don't understand how to deal with these issues or how to answer. Your answer to these serious issues is a gag.
Yes.
And it's not, you're not doing it any justice.
Right.
My overall thesis, and I said this downstairs once we finished watching the movie, we are guns hot.
We just finished this. Oh, yeah. We just watched this thing.
And there is a way, again, the defenders will say we were making fun of white racism.
Yes.
Or, you know, racist in America. Okay. Okay. Fair enough. But there is a way to do this that is sharper and funnier.
Yes.
And it was done by Mel Brooks in Blazing Saddles.
Yes, it
Excuse
was.
Me. Done by Mel Brooks, Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
In Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
They sent up race, and not just white racism against blacks, everything. Towards the end of the movie, the townspeople, you know, Bart had saved the day and everything. He's like, we're not going to do this. Okay, we'll save some room for the... But we don't want the Irish.
Yeah.
Right? And that's hilarious because it just speaks to the whole human experience of it's not me, and it's not mine, it's somebody else.
Yeah, these assholes are going to find something. And and part of, I think, what the issue is, what Mel Brooks did right with Blazing Saddles was the writer on this needed to be like, hey, black person.
Well, yeah. Well, not just...
What am I missing here?
Yeah, I want to really bite. I won't be able to bite if it's just me and...
Exactly.
...whoever writing this movie.
Yeah, because then all you're getting is the... white people doing the opposite of black jokes.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's white chicks.
Yes, yeah. And it's like, just let's get, what is the realistic shit? Like, okay, Amber Ruffin is a writer for Seth Meyers.
Okay.
And she has her own show from that. You know, she's gotten big because they started giving her segments and she's got her own little show. And her sister used to send her these things where it was like examples of racism.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, she would get, she compiled them into a book. What makes this woman awesome is her and her sister were both going to be on Seth pushing the book. Her sister comes out on stage in this very nice dress with her hair done up. And Amber is right behind her wearing the exact same dress, styled the exact same way. And she was like, oh, yeah, yeah. Her sister's just sitting there looking annoyed. She's like, I got her to show me the dress she was going to wear. I bought it. And then I just told the people to style me the exact same way she's styled. Because I get to be on this show all the time. She never does.
Right.
I'm just going to knock that out. But one, it was like she had, her sister had checks with Harriet Tubman on them because you could get them custom printed. Yeah. And this woman at the store where she used one said, I didn't know you could get these checks with your own picture on them.
Oh.
And she's like, before you ask, it's the picture you're thinking of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, God damn. And so it's that sort of shit where it's like, yeah. Okay, what is the real racist shit that goes down when you are with a group of people? Like, what's real?
Right.
What exactly. is a real situation mm-hmm. that white people won't get?
Yes.
That someone will fucking say to this guy, and yes, the basketball thing, cool. He was so bad at basketball, why would he go there thinking he was going to...
It's clearly just there
for that joke. Gag. Yeah, that's all it was there for.
It wasn't situational.
Nope.
Like
nope.
when he's driving from place to place.
Yes, that was fantastic.
And he's pulled over by a cop because, yeah.
Yep.
There you have an opportunity, a real opportunity. Uh-huh. And I'm not saying it needs to be some hyper serious thing.
No.
But you've got to make a decision on what you want to do.
Exactly.
And this movie
doesn't.
It doesn't land on what to do. In fact, it's so not broad enough that you're not in a zany world.
You're
not. At the beginning of the movie, you get a few sight gags that would sort of hedge fake you to believe you're walking into sort of like a airplane-ish, Naked Gun buffoon-ish kind of thing.
Yes.
Which would have landed better. Not like much. Tracksuit jokes with the white guys. The older white people, all in tracksuits. He goes out of the therapist's office and everyone's in a tracksuit.
Everyone's in
the therapist's in a tracksuit. His dad's in a tracksuit. So, okay.
Yeah,
that's wacky.
This works.
All right. I get it. But then, now it's a serious thing.
Yeah.
And we walk into, you know, all of a sudden he's black.
Yes.
Right? Because of tanning pills.
Yes. Yeah, which... You want to talk about the quick, like, I always tell creative writing students where it's like, look, don't get hung up on the irrelevant shit. Like, if you're writing a time travel movie, the least important thing is how they traveled through time.
Yeah.
Because no matter what, it's not real, doesn't matter. This took that advice to the fucking three lines of dialogue.
Yes.
They're tanning pills. They tan your skin chemically. I exceeded the recommended dosage.
Dunzo. And they thought they had buttoned that up with the one guy that shows up at the house party they have after they're both accepted to Harvard.
Yeah.
They being his, C. Thomas Howell and his buddy.
Uh-huh.
And he's a stoner druggie that wants to stay there a few days, but he apparently is working chemistry in suntan lotion. One line says, suntan lotion. Who'd have thought?
Yeah.
And then it's back to...
Yeah, and
I went to a chemist and got.
You know, it would have been so much funnier is if he'd gone over and like reached over and grabbed the joint, took a hit, and his hand was beautifully tan. And they're like, "What's that? Oh, it's a new thing I'm working on, tanning pills."
Right.
Ba boom.
Right, right.
Something.
Because
otherwise, it is an entire out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah, he just pops up in blackface like Al Jolson.
Yeah,
and it's shocking.
And it is a weird blackface.
It's really weird because C. Thomas Howell.
Is one of the whitest looking people in the world.
Yes. Yes.
Like, he was a Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
he wasn't. No. He could have been a Cobra Kai.
He was fucking Pony Boy in the
Outsiders.
He was
Pony Boy, yeah.
All that capital built up as Pony Boy.
Yeah.
And he spent it 3 years later on this.
Yep. He was hanging out with Macchio.
Yeah, well.
So he had it coming.
You make a good point.
I do. It's compelling, yeah.
Karma.
But... But yeah, this like...
So he defrauds Harvard.
Because here's what gets me first off. It starts out, for those who don't know, his father is in therapy. His father's rich. His father gives him everything and spoils him, and then decides at the last minute to be like, well, you're having to pay for yourself to go to college.
Right.
And then we find out that a full degree from Harvard University back in those days cost $87,000 in today's money, including living expenses.
Correct.
3 full years.
Correct. Correct. And you may think, well, let's get a loan. Well, the writers think they buttoned that up, too, by him being denied at the bank.
Yeah, he was denied. The Human Torch was denied a bank loan. Student fucking financial aid. I love how they make it look. No, financial aid is here to pay for shit for you. No. Financial aid is there to hook you up with the myriad ways you can pay for it yourself.
Correct.
And if a student walks in like, I got accepted, but I can't. Oh, don't worry. You can get a student. There are loans that you can get signed up for without having to fucking get off the phone.
Yeah.
They will have you with a loan.
Exactly.
You'll be
running to give that money away.
Fine.
But
even
if
your parents are assholes and all that, you're over 18. That's the thing that gets me here is at this point, when you're going to law school, not only are you over 18, you are over 21. You have a bachelor's degree from another 4-year university.
Yes.
You are between 21 and 22 years of age. Yes, my parents make a lot of money. I don't.
Right.
And I am an adult.
Correct.
So
it's a weird blurring of the lines where he's still living with his parents and apparently he's just a hedonist and, you know, the opening scene of not knowing who he's sleeping with. Oh, the 80s.
Right. But they didn't really go far enough with making him unlikable.
He's plenty unlikable.
Yeah. I don't think they went far enough.
No,
is what I'm saying.
He's just...
LaRusso is more unlikable.
Absolutely. Well, of course.
They needed to aim for LaRusso or Gary.
Well, don't go too far with Gary.
Yeah, but they need that's more the area they need to be thinking of at the beginning so that we can give a fuck that he's not a dick face at the end.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe quite not so far as the, you know... Yeatsian dragon becoming that is Gary.
Yeah.
But I get your point.
They're needed because it didn't feel like he was fighting against anything other than basic laziness at the beginning.
So we start with our protagonist being a complete prick in hopes that he has an arc where he learns something.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
The hero's supposed to learn something by the time it's all over with.
Something's learned and he seems to be a very changed and humbled man.
Right.
But they didn't build it enough to make that change and humbling matter.
The change and humbling is like...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Either way, he's changed and humbled.
Yep. But he's changed and humbled and still at Harvard.
Still at Harvard, consequence free. Yeah. So, he defrauds...
Defrauds. Not just Harvard. He defrauds a charity.
Correct.
He commits so many fucking felonies in this movie.
Outright... fraud.
Yes.
And crimes have been committed.
Yeah.
But that's okay because wackiness will ensue.
Wackiness ensues and he's learned a lesson and the black lady likes him at the end.
Right. You've won the heart of Radon Chong.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
And it turns out that the real prize was the friends he made along the way.
Exactly. Whom he makes none.
He objectively alienates everybody in his life.
Yes.
Who the fuck, like, I guess I could be okay with interracial dating. No, not with this fucking
guy. No.
At this moment, yes, he's humbled. He's gone through all this, but still, yeah, that's great, dude.
Just consequence-free, relative consequence-free.
Yeah.
Existence with this, I don't know.
At the beginning, he was a kid who you kind of did feel bad for because that does suck.
That's
at the last
a shitty
minute.
Situation, like, but you know
the move that he makes is so.
It's a weird judgment call and nothing else.
Well, and since we're speaking of weird judgment calls, let's talk about that fuckface Brad.
Oh, yeah, Mephistopheles.
Yeah, fucking no reason. This motherfucker is just like, yeah, you know, I got into Radcliffe. Well, I got into Boston University. Well, my girl will be able to help you out. Like, fucking Kareem, that whole thing. Like, that guy was nothing wrong with him.
No. Many times in these 80s films, it's easy to point out that the villain, quote unquote, really isn't.
Yeah.
Right? Like, a lot of bad things you can say about the guys in the frat and Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
And they're, yeah, sure, they're a prickly bunch, those frat guys. You know what they aren't? Rapists.
Yeah, they're not rapists. They don't install.
They don't. They make it pretty easy for you to go, not the villain.
Yeah, that guy's a rapist. Those other guys installed security cameras. And
broke into that place, yeah.
Broke into a sorority house.
Filmed them.
Set up an ongoing surveillance system in their private,
and then de facto leader rapes a woman.
Yes. Yep.
I'm not making this up.
This is not. No.
This is not contrarian Clarkson Gags.
It's not. This is literally just a description of what happens in the movie.
The same eye that picked out, like everyone else that has eyes, LaRusso being a piece of shit, you can pick that out easily.
Yes, yeah.
The kids in Porky's are wrong.
Yes, they are.
They are underage. That is no reason to ruin this man's business. And I don't mean get him out of business. They destroy the fucking building.
Yeah.
Should they have beat up that kid? Probably not.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he hadn't started nothing, wouldn't have been nothing.
Had the kid not, was the kid at the time he got the shit kicked out of him being a prick?
Yeah.
Had he been caught?
Yeah.
Did he accept that he had been caught?
No.
That's when you get your ass kicked.
Yes.
So, oh, my God.
These are the things you can point to.
Yeah.
So my point of bringing that up is a guy that we're supposed to dislike hasn't really shown us anything that dislikable other than being sort of a schmuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or a yutz or whatever. It's just sort of he's just there.
Yeah.
And the quote unquote 80s villainy doesn't come till later and it's all like diffused anyway.
Yeah.
It's all for that gag.
Yeah.
He's only there for that last
That last gag where he comes in and is like, hey guys, you've been like, this should get me into Harvard for free.
Right.
I just caught fraud that's happening in your school.
Well, we're not sure if you'll get into this, but you've done a hell of a job in investigative journalism.
Yeah.
Perhaps you'd like to attend Emerson.
Yes. We can make these things happen.
So, anyway, my case against this tone deafness in filmmaking is made completely crystal clear by the dinner scene.
Yes.
We have, in the middle of this,
our
boy has apparently fallen for Radon Chong at first.
Yeah.
But then,
and has set up a date with her on Friday night.
Correct.
Then gets a chance to bang a white lady.
Right. That she believes him to be black because she's dumb as a fucking rock too.
Yep.
And she has some, I don't know, weird thing about.
It's a type of girl in college.
I gotcha. Okay.
There's a type, you've met them.
Oh yeah. I was in anthropology.
Yeah. There's a type of girl in college, just like there's a type of guy in college.
Yeah.
Who are like, you know, it's easier than having a personality. Dating someone who looks interesting and can substitute as that personality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Melora Hardin, Jan Levinson Gould from The Office, for those who are fans, throws herself at him. They have sex within minutes of meeting.
Yes.
They have sex within minutes. And then she's like, hey, why don't you come have dinner with my family tonight?
Right.
So he's like, fuck that girl I'm in love with.
I'm going to do this.
I'm going to go to this meal.
As we sort of ape a movie that handled these situations in a famous way.
Yes.
Guess who's coming to dinner?
Yeah.
Handled wonderfully.
Are you saying, just so we are going on record right now, and I need you to think before you say one way or the other of this, before you commit, you have to make sure because you're committing to a lot. Are you saying that C. Thomas Howell does not give as moving, convincing, or powerful a performance as Sidney Poitier. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
You I'm heard it, down. Folks. It is on the record.
I am coming down on that side.
Sidney Poitier is better than C. Thomas.
It's easy. But as a family, they decided to do this scene.
Yes, they decided.
You know
that
came up. It'll be just like see who's coming to dinner. But wacky.
This is going to be, and it's that shit where you know that some writer somewhere along the line is great. No, this is wonderful. It'll be our homage.
Oh, yeah. And in this scene, they decide, so do we lean all the way in on wacky?
Yeah, let's see how far in we can lean on this. So,
holy shit.
He's having dinner with this family. The mother is viewing him as a Mandingo type, I think we'll say.
Right.
Her lust on full display.
Right.
The younger brother views him as a prince-like rock and roll figure who is flicking his tongue at him, and that seems to excite this young boy.
Correct.
And the father, well, he just sees an entire minstrel show.
Yeah.
Fat white bitch.
Yeah, sees him in a
slut.
In a pimp suit, his daughter?
Daughter, yeah.
Pregnant.
Full, heavy pregnant next
heavy
to
heavy pregnant, and pimp character chewing on a watermelon rind.
Yes, and he says, go get my heroin.
And my hypodermic needle. Stupid white, fat white slut, fat or whatever he says.
What are you looking at? Oh, by the way, hugely important detail being left out. The person having this fantasy is Leslie Nielsen.
Correct.
The person picturing this is Leslie Nielsen. This is post-police story.
Oh, police.
But pre-Naked Gun. So this is like maybe 2 or 3 years before Naked Gun.
Yeah.
So at this point, he's still somewhat more known as a serial.
Right. sort of.
And it's very much
Judge Schmale's character.
Yeah, it's very much the moment from Dana Gould's stand-up where he's talking about going home for like Thanksgiving dinner or dinner and meeting your college girlfriend's parents. And they'll be like, well, I guess you'll be sleeping in the guest room. And the girl's like, I am an adult. It's not like at college we don't have sex every night. And then the father's just sitting there eating like, well. Like,
yeah.
That's entirely what that moment
yes,
is.
Yes. But it's so. Had this
we
whole
need
thing,
to find a reason to kick them out.
Yeah. If this had been so wacky, that would have just been another series of wacky gags in a sea of wacky gags.
But it wasn't.
We have all these little serious moments.
And then a wacky gag.
And then this fucking full tilt.
Yeah. Just.
A kaleidoscope end of 2001-ish
yes.
bananas this series
is what's
of scenes.
Happening
it's
in this,
just.
This is what happens in this movie?
Yeah.
Well, goddamn.
And they would point to that. The filmmakers would say, well, see, we're making fun of what white racists think.
I don't know.
I have met white racists. Even, I don't think they think that.
Yeah, I don't think they do. Yeah.
But maybe, I don't know. Fuck them anyway. But this is just.
This is not great.
What?
Yeah.
So it tells me that they knew how to do it.
Yes.
How to do sort of a Blazing Saddles, all guns blazing, no pun intended.
Yeah.
Way to make fun, if that's your.
If that's what your goal
that's
is.
That's your impetus, right?
That's what you're, yeah.
Yeah, this is your thesis statement, rather. So, go for it.
Yes.
There's plenty to make fun of.
And because that's what the problem is when it comes to satire like this is, first off, it's very difficult to do without, like, Hope pointed something out perfectly right now, where she's like, boy, if nothing else, the past few years have told me you could call a movie weak-willed white guy having temper tantrum because he's no longer relevant.
Yeah.
And within an hour of its release, you'd have dudes on fucking Red Pill subreddits like, yo, man, that scene when cum Dropsley shoots all those people while crying because he, like, that it's gone.
Yeah,
it's gone. And with this, you are feeding the racists so much
so
that you've got to be careful or you've got to just say, we're doing this.
Go for it. But they don't.
We're fucking doing it.
And
yeah.
Because they vacillate between
yes.
these two polls
uh-huh.
or choices, you're left with, wait a minute, do yeah. you see that?
Yeah. I'm not sure what y'all are going for here.
Because to just, you know, push back from your word processor in 1986 and say, we've really said something here.
Yeah.
And as I said downstairs, for that last speech that his friend yeah. gives at the whatever, de facto Marx yeah. Brothers court scene.
That really was not being held for any reason.
No.
Yeah.
None that I can tell,
yeah.
except it for he was admitted to in a committee, but then it turns into this. So why is...
If they honestly, if
the
they,
schmuck coming in with papers proving he's white.
If just, that had happened beforehand, it would have made more sense.
Right.
But they didn't. All that I picture is Burt Reynolds from Boogie Nights behind the camera when Ari, when whatever the guy's name is, finishes his speech and he goes, this is what they'll remember me for.
Exactly.
That is exactly, and I hope that everyone gets that reference.
And I hate that my old soundboard went down because I had an entire speech from Burt Reynolds. I remember with passion and acting. Yeah.
This is it.
This is it.
This is what they'll remember me for.
And you can tell Carol Black was like, yes, this will button up everything.
Yeah.
This speech will turn the tables on anyone thinking whatever they're thinking. So, see?
Uh-huh.
You're not going to criticize him for the color of his skin, right?
Right, yeah.
Boy, oh boy, I knocked this one out of the park.
And
no, you didn't.
There was a humorous thing in it when he's sitting there doing all this. Can we really blame him for the kind of people he grew up?
Like, yeah.
Giving it was a clever thought.
It's a clever thought. Had you made a decision to go with that, that would have paid off.
Had you made a decision.
Right, but you didn't. You kept jumping around. And I don't know. You know, making a movie is a pain in the ass, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And
But the reason it's a pain in the ass is because you have to make decisions. And if you don't make a decision, all you get is a bunch of shit just happening for no real reason.
I know. And the second act conflict of he didn't just defraud the university and this charity, his actions directly resulted in now his love interest not getting the money she should have gotten. And she's a single mother and all these tropes are laid on her.
Yeah.
I don't know why we need to do all that to make her feel bad, except the child's delightful.
Yeah. Oh, the child. Easily the best part of this movie is any time that child is on screen, because, oh my God,
if all of the
lacking charisma.
If you thought the little boy in Scrooged could have been a little more charming.
Yes.
This is him.
Yes. This little kid, it's like turn up every ounce of charisma, every bit of magnetism, anything that will attract your eye on this screen.
Right.
That little boy is just backflipping through it.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, he's wonderful. I want to see a movie about him.
Yes.
Yeah. And it is just that kid that there is that brightness on the face that's like, okay, little man, I just want a movie that is you describing what you think this movie's about.
I'll tell you what, I know you thought by throwing that in, it was going to be like, oh, it's so cute. Yeah, well, actually, it makes it worse.
It makes it so much
because
worse.
Because you're taking money not just away from her, but him.
Oh, yeah, they really ladled that on. Yeah.
So, huh?
And what I love is the simplicity of, oh, yeah, you thought because nobody in LA applied for it that just sits there. No,
that's not how that works.
No, that shit always opens up,
dude. Of course.
And
that's
also
the point of having a charity.
Yeah. Also, how is she in California if her family clearly lives in
great question.
Yeah.
Great question.
When you really start looking at shit like that in movies, you're like, oh, someone.
No, this was a series of pushing back from the desk going, this'll do
this
it. She's a single mother. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But then again, she didn't just take the scholarship.
Yeah.
He took it from her.
And that if they, I got him with the horror of that and having to like, it needed to be a thicker, like, holy shit.
That's a serious thing.
Yeah, and see how frivolous you're being with your life while this woman is. Yeah.
No, he doesn't.
The frivolity needed to be just hammered in more.
Correct. If you were going full wacky and then you're hit with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that would be a sort of punch you didn't see coming.
Yes.
Rather than like, oh, that complicates this sort of wacky thing.
Uh-huh.
And as far as I can tell, that's only used as a device to spin off into a noises off situation back home.
Oh my God, that scene was so fucking bad. Anytime that there is a requirement for C. Thomas Howell's character to behave black in any way, it's the worst thing in the world. Him say, "What's up, man?" Like,
oh my God.
Holy crap. They're very militant.
Oh yeah.
That is one of the greatest goddamn moments.
And again, Mephistopheles' best friend's like, they're very militant. So he keeps dressed like a Black Panther, playing to Shaft.
Yeah.
As one podcast that I listened to, I can't remember the name of it. Oh, shit. Forgive me, guys. Anyway, I can't remember it. One of the hosts is a black guy, and he brought up the fact, like, why are you playing Shaft?
Yeah.
Shaft and Black Panthers don't have anything to do with one another.
Nothing whatsoever. No, this is literally just...
You know, the writer and director and producers were like, yeah.
Yeah, it's white.
Play Shaft.
Hey.
It's black.
It's exactly. That is the exact statement that they were thinking. Oh, no, this is black.
That statement, those two words, yeah, were uttered a lot more than anyone should be comfortable with uttering in that writing room.
Oh, God, yeah. Because here's the thing that I've started to learn as I've gotten older. Apparently, throughout our entire childhoods, there were basically two entertainment industries.
Yeah.
Like, there were two music industries. There were two entertainment industries.
Yes.
And I'm not going to go into detail about what separated them, but let's just say that very few things crossed over from one to the other.
Right.
And I think they just went.
And when they were crossed over, they were handled in a very serious way, like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Yes.
And then when they were handled again in a funny way, they were handled as broad as you can with blazing saddles.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
These are simple farmland. These are simple farm people.
People of the land.
You know. Morons.
Which Cleavon Little cracking up on that one is one of my favorites. The chemistry between Gene Wilder and Cleavon Little does not get the respect it deserves in that movie.
Because
half the time it's like, they just didn't say cut. These two motherfuckers are just making each other laugh, and they're just keeping it in the movie.
It's a happy accident that it happened at all with Cleavon, because originally he was supposed to be Richard Pryor.
Oh, yeah.
But the studio didn't want to do it because they didn't think that they would have chemistry.
Yeah.
You'd think Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder wouldn't have chemistry, that they again basically had a whole other career of proving the studio full of shit.
Yeah, they did so many movies together where they were like classics. Stir Crazy, Silver Streak.
Oh my God.
Oh,
hilarious shit. Yeah. So I'm kind of glad that Richard Pryor didn't get knotted in for The Sheriff, because you've got a whole career of him doing other films with Gene Wilder, and Cleavon Little is fucking amazing.
He is.
And they have great chemistry together.
And honestly, in this movie, the little kid, Mephistopheles, and James Earl Jones are the only like irreplaceables.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. The only thing that gets it, like, I get James Earl Jones now, like, looking at this, because normally, like, the hard-ass college professor, I disagree with that trope, just because it's like, especially at this level, no, there is so much more. We are training a colleague. You are here because you're supposed to be. Now let's fucking do this. I am here to train you.
Yeah, this makes a lot more sense in this part than it would be in an undergrad situation.
Yes.
This is what you want.
Yeah.
You want a clear A to B to C path here.
Yeah.
You're all here to, at Harvard.
Yeah.
To get to a destination that has a definite payoff.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, you've got to turn in your shit on time. That's what's going to be asked of you in the real world.
Yeah, a judge won't accept any of this shit. Yeah.
And he has an A, because he's James Earl Jones. And then there should have been more in the script, but there's enough of it to show that he's not a complete hard ass.
Yeah, yes.
But he adds a sort of gravitas in that role where it's not a complete antagonist.
Yeah.
It's somebody you want to perform for, because or produce as a student for, because you have respect for
him. Yes. Yeah. And what I love is how when you look at, you know, you're going to have to get an A on the final in order to have an acceptable grade. Yeah. And then she's like, I got an A. Yeah. They don't send you the grade on your final. They send you your final fucking grade.
Right.
Oh my God. James Earl Jones was basically looking at Ray Don Chan's character saying, based off your abilities, an acceptable grade for you in this class is an A.
Right. Exactly.
And that's what he was doing. You are going to have to get an A in order to get what you should.
Correct.
It's fucking great when you're able to look at it in those terms.
Right. And you miscast that role and you're kind of fucked.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Louis Gossett Jr. wouldn't have had the same.
No, he would not. He would not have. Yeah.
I'm frightened.
Yeah. Oh, so you don't want to do your work.
We're going to recast this with Delroy Lindo. Oh, fuck, man.
David Keith.
Yeah, no shit.
Or Keith David. Not
Keith
sure
David.
Which. Keith David. Yeah, Keith David would be awesome. So you
he could probably
do your,
pull it off.
You don't want to do your fucking work on
time. Yeah, that would probably work.
Because he can smile after any line and it's like, that works.
Yeah, that's true.
Print it. Yeah. That's all we need. He did that smile. We're set.
But
you motherfucker.
The presence of those good performances notwithstanding, the tone is fucked.
Everything is inconsistent. The casting of non-white characters is tokeny at best outside of James Earl Jones.
And I'm fine with doing that.
That's, but
you
You gotta have something.
You gotta go with it.
This was like,
and you don't tell me that you were trying to give us serious turns here and there by not going as broad when the anthropology civil rights white lady student comes in holding fucking essentially ironized McGinty.
Yes. Yep.
From the don't litter ads.
Yeah. And what I love is his look, just shades of pink. And he gave her that look. No, dude, you know what's happening there. And you're like, yeah, that's right, babe. Maybe we should go talk about this in my apartment. Go sit on the bed and talk about this.
On the arm of an American Indian in his hair and fucking Willie Nelson braids.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck?
Are
you going to put a fucking feather in his hair next? Come on.
Got it.
I mean, you're right there with it.
Yeah. Just go. Yeah.
I don't want you to.
Yeah.
But if you're going to be broad, that's what that would be. He would come in like a fucking headdress.
They're jumping back and forth. It's like it gives you almost whiplash because it's all over the place.
That's right.
It needed to either lean in on the serious or lean on the comedy more, or honestly lean in on them both. Fuck it.
Something. Because it would be incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
To make this serious on its face because it's a guy who took tanning pills to become, to pass as black.
Yeah.
Now, okay, it's already wacky. You're already wacky.
That's so what you have to look at. Yeah, the fact that what sets up your entire thing
is
a wacky fucking statement.
Right.
That this guy goes into before running it by anyone.
Right.
Like, when he's like, why did you let me do this? Bitch, you told him about it. After you've done it.
Exactly. So in my mind, if that's how we're getting to where we want to go, you were saying full wacky.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And when you show moments that are completely wacky, I'm not saying it's not funny.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't sitting there, po-faced, shaking my finger at the screen. No.
Humorous moments in it.
No, I'm not making that. I'm not fucking polishing my good guy badge and saying, "Well, you see what you're doing here." No, not at all.
No.
I'm saying you have demonstrated you can do this, be able to point out how fucking ridiculous and wacky white racists are, or racism in general, but then you back off because you think you need to be essentially, on this very special episode of Soul Man.
Yeah.
Like, what?
It was running from one special episode to another, but none of them had teeth. It was always it was always just the special episode that dealt with drugs. So they always had to be weird, like, hey, man, I got these goofball pills.
Right.
Oh, dude, my sister's best friend got like.
Right, right.
It's always some shit like that.
Right.
Unless it's growing pains, in which case Kirk Cameron turns down an offer of cocaine in the bathroom from Christy Swanson.
I would have played that differently.
I would have faked it. I would have faked it because here's the thing. If girls bringing you into a bathroom like that to do, she ain't paying attention to how much cocaine you're doing.
That's true.
Right, Kirk, the winner of the wet t-shirt contest is not the one with the wettest t-shirt. It's all right. You can walk away from this with a fucking board, bro.
Yeah, yeah. So it doesn't make any sense.
Nothing in this movie is okay. None of it makes sense.
It's beyond the weird take on weird satire of racism is the weird not getting your own joke. It's not funny enough.
It isn't.
And that is almost more offensive to me.
And that's,
you have a chance to be hilarious and you made a decision not to.
Yes.
Because, this is a serious moment. It is.
It is.
He took tanning pills to get here.
To be black. And look at him.
He's gray.
He looks Italian at best.
He looks like past date ground beef.
Yeah. Yes. That's.
He doesn't look like anything else.
No. No.
He's made of rotten ground beef.
Yeah. He looks.
He is that
sort of tan
color.
Honestly, if he had just taken the wig off, he would have looked like a white guy with a weird tan from Jersey.
Right.
Had he just taken the fucking hair off?
Yeah. He looked like fucking Snooki.
Yeah. He would have. He actually. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Only I'll say it. More fuckable.
You went there.
Hey, C. Thomas Howell was a cute kid. There's no arguing that.
Okay.
You don't get Ray Don Chong going after you if you're not a cute kid.
That's
all I'm saying.
That's true.
When you're knocking down Ray Don Chong.
Yeah, all this set up for serious situations, but it's like they forgot.
Yes.
at some point.
That what they were talking about was serious. Well, and it's what makes it weird. That's how you could tell that a black person wasn't involved in the writing.
Yep.
Is because it's like, oh, y'all motherfuckers are just missing everything here, aren't you? You're like,
yeah.
There are so many points that, like, it's what pisses me off about school shit. Whenever there's like, yeah, no, that's not realistic. What would happen in that situation would be funnier and more maddening.
Right.
But we're not going to go into that. Okay, cool. Great.
And the MVP of this watching session is Hope.
Yeah.
Because at the end of it, we were discussing the issues.
Yeah.
The fucking magazine stand of issues
yes.
that this film is.
Yes.
And Hope's like, this is sort of like, quit trying to help.
Yes.
Nailed
yes.
the quit fuck out of it.
Trying to help.
That is exactly what this is.
Yeah.
Because you know as sure as we're sitting here.
Uh-huh.
At this point, she's turned, pushed away from her desk so much she's in another county.
Oh, yeah.
But she is on the other end of the room going,
yeah.
Yes, I have helped.
Because this person was thinking, I just wrote and produced Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah. Yeah.
And not, if y'all know this show, you know the one we're talking about. This is some behind-the-scenes Sullivan's Travel shit where they walk away. Afterwards, you just see a lot of white people high-fiving each other like, well, that's it. Pack it up. We fixed racism.
Yeah, we did.
Pack it up, folks.
We're anybody else here ate James Joyce? Bet you didn't.
We're right. going to Arby's.
Exactly. We're getting that weird chicken salad with the grapes in it. Nathan, I wrapped your sandwich in cellophane just the way you like it. Another superior film that handles situations like that.
Which one was that again?
The Jerk.
The Jerk. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, we did just watch it. Holy shit. I wrapped just... Thanks. God damn it.
This music speaks to me. That's fucking hilarious. And does it so much better.
It really
does. And there's nothing wackier than The Jerk.
No, there isn't.
So,
goddamn regular.
She has promised me more money. As I will be getting more money, sending more money soon, because she has promised me a blowjob. That's a good boy. And the brother's like... It's fucking great.
Goddamn average.
Die, Nathan R. Johnson.
I had just gone through a divorce. Stop smoking.
Like, yeah. Can't empathize.
Oh, God. Just the insanity of that fucking attempt.
Yeah.
And it is. Stop helping. Stop helping with, like, stop taking the lead.
Yes.
Is what I think so many have to. It's like, hey, you know what? If I want to hear about what it's like to be a black person, I'm not going to listen to y'all.
No.
Like, let's get an authentic fucking voice in here.
Voices.
Yes.
Something.
Anything authentic in this.
So, yeah, Spike may have had a stronger argument by watching the film before commenting.
Right.
But I don't think he needs to.
I don't think he needed to.
I'm with Spike.
Yeah, he's like...
I'm all the way with Spike on this because
he looked like a chocolate orange.
It's
the best way I heard it put was we watched this movie. I went to a Terror Tuesday at the Alamo Draft House back in the day, and there was a movie. It was called like Black Voodoo Frankenstein or
some shit
like that. Yeah, and the guy who introduced is like, you got to understand, there's a lot of blackface in this, and the only way I can describe it is they all look kind of chocolatey.
Right.
Not just, and then it starts right. going, you look at him, it's like, that is chocolatey. That looks like one, you know, those shitty chocolate church donuts that get left out in the sun until
it's sweaty.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And this, it was, you look like a fucking chocolate orange.
Yep.
It is offensive to think that any other black person would look at you and be like, hey.
Exactly.
Is it contagious?
Yeah, no shit.
What, the clear skin condition that you have that makes you look like that?
Right.
You look like you haven't eaten any protein ever in your life. Are you like?
Yeah.
You look like you have been. You look like you were raised in a fucking gulag.
Yes. Yes.
If that had been what it is, if he'd come in and been like, "Oh no, I grew up.
You rolled mostly, out of the prison from Midnight Express, and then you got painted like a chocolate orange.
I grew up mostly. I grew up mostly in a gulag.
Yeah.
Yes, that's it. That's it. Then we moved to L.A. and I got into Harvard Law School last week.
Tripped over the fucking gulag or pelico.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. It was terrible. Oh, by the way, I found apparently there is a film version of One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, mm-hmm. and it's on YouTube.
Oh, my God.
And I started to watch it, and it's upsetting.
No shit.
Oh, my God, it's upsetting. When they're going out to go work, and they're just, stop, everyone's getting frisked, and there's a pile of clothing behind him. It's like, oh, he's got an extra shirt on, take it off. Nope. What? Yeah, why are you trying to stay warm?
Ridiculous.
Siberia, how dare you? Yet this, like, again, there is, this is an issue that could have something said about it, because here's the thing, from the inside, when the racial stuff, insofar as affirmative action and shit goes, now that I know how it works, if someone's complaining that affirmative action is keeping someone out of a college, it's, did you know that a coin flip of a quarter is not exactly 50-50?
Yes.
Yeah. It is literally that minute a level of difference, because it's like, okay, we've got two people here. They both have same GPA, same SAT, same ACT, same classes that they took, comparable extracurriculars. Mm-hmm. Their parents both make the same amount of money. This kid's a white kid from the suburbs. This is a black. Okay, you know what? We don't have as many of this kid, so hey, we're going to do.
Yeah.
But you have taken, it is literally in lieu of a coin toss.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's all it is. And again, if anyone is being, like, you are talking about like two or three people at most.
Right.
And when folks, my dad getting pissy about, like, well, how come, you know, that class out, that school out there, they only have, you know, 15 kids. So, boy, they're just going to get to go to whatever state college. Like, yeah, Dad, they have 15 kids. You know what else they don't have? A football team or a basketball team or a journalism department or a theater department or any of the extracurriculars that those other big schools have.
Yeah.
And, boy, you know what makes it harder to get into college? Not having those things.
Yeah.
I'm wagering getting into college from Refugio High School was way easier than from Eagle Pass.
Probably.
Yeah.
Just definitely.
So fucking much, so many differences and all that. And nope, we're just going to pretend that's not true.
There's a lot of that.
Nope.
There's a lot of that.
Everything's fine. That's why I love that needly little, like, this is an argument against the affirmative action policy. It's like, I just wanted that kid to get beaten with a bag of oranges.
Yes, yes.
No bruises, just internal damage.
The full bing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. I mean, they have a running gag of two guys
telling black jokes.
The entire movie.
The entire movie. It's like every time you see these guys, they're dropping black jokes.
Yeah. Like, that's all they talk about.
Yeah.
You're leading me to believe this.
Yeah, you're leading me to believe this is just a running commentary of black jokes from these two Harvard guys.
Hey, no offense. Until it is, and he punches them both across the room. Like fucking Clark Kent in Superman 2.
The level of brain damage and mobility issues that getting hit that hard is going to cause for the rest of your life is
kicked off your feet and through a room
over a table.
Come on,
like that. The fact that, first off, we saw C. Thomas Howell without his shirt on in this movie.
That's not happened.
He couldn't hit anything that hard.
No,
not in the slightest. Then Radon Chong was like, you know what? I'm going to forget all that shitty stuff.
Never mind.
You seem to have learned.
And on top of your almost consequent free behavior, go ahead and you've won the girl.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay. So you've given everything back, set stuff to zero, not a punishment.
Great. And you've got to stay in school.
You got to stay at the school you defrauded.
That's when you say, well, Clark, there are consequences. No, you got to stay in Harvard Law School.
You got to stay in Harvard Law School.
The rest of it is just slap on the wrist.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Fuck, if that means that no one gets to get thrown out of Harvard Law School. Yep. If we're talking about this, we're talking about precedent.
Yes.
Here we go.
Uh-huh.
I point to this asshole.
Isn't it true that a few years ago you allowed someone who lied about their identity? Like,
well.
And what I love is how apparently it was just that easy to claim your race was different back then.
Apparently, it's loosely based in a book called Black Like Me where a guy did this.
Yes.
So fuck him too.
Yeah, but no, Black Like Me was a little different because I believe it was a man who was of mixed race.
He got a job, bro, right?
Yeah, he had a job. He went basically to an area. He's like, okay, if I do these things, I pass for black. Mm. So I'm just going to, it's like the movie Gentleman's Agreement with Gregory Peck where he pretends to be Jewish.
Yeah.
It was literally like, okay, white people say it's not hard being black. Let's fucking see.
Right.
and tried it, and basically it was exactly what C. Thomas Howell, like, yeah, I can stop. I'm going to do that.
Yeah. The one line in this movie that lets you know that if they wanted to be serious and not have him take tanning pills.
Yeah.
Had this been like a completely, had it been just a telling of that story. Yes. Like,
yeah.
Means they could have handled this better.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But chose not to.
They chose not to.
That's why I'm so beside myself and smarting is because you could, but you didn't.
Yeah. And that line at the end, that line of, if I didn't like, I could have stopped.
Right.
That needed to be a bam moment. And it wasn't.
It wasn't because I don't trust you to give me that line.
No, I don't. It's just not there.
At all.
Yeah.
And it's a letdown.
It is. It is.
As an opportunity missed.
As movies go, this is no good.
Yes.
I think that's what we're going for. As movies go, this is no good. And I think that's probably a good place to wind up on a little
bit. What did this make?
I mean, I think it made money because it was the 80s and it was a movie.
That's true.
It's going to be very low budget, I'm betting. Let's see. Actually, I think mine will shut off, but how much are we looking at off of fucking Soul Man? It's weird, like, I don't know, man. There's nothing I can really say about this movie, because the more I think about it, the more it makes my head just go, fuck.
Box office, $35 million.
That's better than it should have. It's far better than it should have. Jesus.
Budget was 4.5. Yeah.
I made a lot of money. Yeah. A $4 million movie. Yeah, I can see that. But what really floors me that I pointed out somewhere in it, like, wait a minute. Harvard allowed them to film on campus.
Yes. Because some awkward white motherfucker was like, this is a very important message we're saying.
Yeah, we'll do this. This is good. We'll
love to hear the pitch that Carol Black gave Harvard on that one.
It's like when you find out, like, UT jealously guards its fucking intellectual property and everything.
Of course.
The one time they allowed it was that Tommy Lee Jones movie, Man of the House.
Oh, yeah.
And that thing was a hunk of shit. I knew people who were extras on it and were like, yeah, Tommy Lee Jones is an asshole.
Yeah, I knew a guy who was a PA, worked directly with him.
Yeah, he's not a good, he's not a pleasant person.
Not pleasant, apparently.
Yeah. Piece of shit. Fucking pizza face asshole. Because he does, he's got a pizza face.
Pizza.
A fucking pineapple head.
He's a swinger.
Well, thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you next time with who knows what. Probably religious.
Probably.
Bye-bye.